You're listening to Something More with Chris Boyd, Cape Cod's financial talk show.
Asset Management Resources, LLC, and J. Christopher Boyd, CFP, provide investment advice on an individual basis to clients only. Proper advice depends on a complete analysis of all facts and circumstances. The information given on this program is in the nature of general financial comments and cannot be relied upon as pertaining to your specific situation. AMR, LLC, cannot guarantee that using the information from this show will generate profits or ensure freedom from loss. Listeners should consult their own financial advisors or conduct their own due diligence before making any financial decisions.
Something More with Chris Boyd, Certified Financial Planner Professional. Your fulfillment facilitator.
Help me help you. Help me help you. Help me help you.
Your partner in prosperity.
Show me the money!
Derek, you better go!
Show me the money!
Advising clients across Cape Cod and across the country. Here he is, your host, J. Christopher Boyd.
Welcome. This is Something More with Chris Boyd. I'm Chris Boyd, Certified Financial Planner Professional, and my office is Asset Management Resources. We're a registered investment advisor firm right here in Hyannis, in the same office suite as my brother's estate planning law firm, Boyd & Boyd PC. We also have an office in Dedham with my associate, Michael Perna. He's also a Certified Financial Planner Practitioner, and we are a financial program. We call it Something More because we like to talk about all those important dollar and cents issues, but also those quality of life issues that make the money matters matter. So we'd like to have you join us. If ever you want to reach us, you can call us both at our office during the week. And when we're here in studio, it's 508-771-8900. Otherwise, you can connect with us on our website at amrfinancial.com, where we post our podcasts on iTunes as well as on our website. And on our Facebook fan page, Something More with Chris Boyd, or you can send us an email at radio@amrfinancial.com. All right, and this week I'm joined by two gentlemen this hour. I've got with me Brian Regan from our office at Asset Management Resources.
Hi, everybody.
And also Bruce Monrad from Northeast Investors Trust. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you back, Bruce. We talked to you I don't know, it was probably 6 months, maybe more than that. It was probably sometime early in the beginning of the year. I went and listened to some of that to make sure we didn't cover the exact same topics. But I think it was late February or something like that.
I think that's right.
After some of the volatility in the market. Today, in this hour, we're definitely going to be talking about fixed income investing, bonds, Bruce's fund, the Northeast Investors Trust, is a high-yield bond fund. Bruce, for our listeners who may want to go look it up and get a prospectus, what's the ticker of the mutual fund?
Yeah, the ticker is NTHEX, and as you say, we're a high-yield bond fund.
And I imagine you offer other services as well, like through separate accounts and things like that, or do you do only the fund primarily?
You know, only the fund. We want to keep it all
great,
tidy.
That's good. That makes it easy for us. So in any case, high yield bonds, we're going to talk a little bit about that as we get into our conversation. But maybe before we do, want to start more generally and talk a little bit about the environment in which we find ourselves, you know, the setting for fixed income. We just had the Fed chair announce recently the change in interest rates on the short end for the overnight rate. Where do you see us in the scheme of things with respect to interest rates, where they're headed, where we're going, and, how far into this process are we, do you think, relative to how much interest rates may rise?
Yeah, obviously the Fed raised interest rates this last week,
Yeah.
And And we you know, the market is pricing in a few more rate increases, but the Fed itself has what they call the dots. And by that, they have they put out a chart of where they think interest rates are going, each of the Fed governors and members of the Open Market Committee. And what's interesting is that the Fed is predicting more rate increases than is the market. So, you know, what we take away from that is that the markets, meaning again the fixed income markets, are pretty aggressive.
Do you think that the Fed has to have a rosier outlook in the way they put those plot projections on their forecasts?
Yeah, that's a great question, because they have all they've missed. Meaning the Fed has missed on in that direction. I think they've missed in the past because of things like oil prices going down and inflation undershooting. Again, maybe not necessarily through no fault of their own. And, you know, so fast forward to today, I think it's what they think will happen, with the caveat that if you had a trade war or some exogenous shock, some shock from out of the blue, then clearly they would move off of what they're predicting. But under sort of normal base case outcomes, I think that they're signaling what they want to do.
You know, any thoughts on that, Brian?
I would just say that for years that, and you addressed this, that they've been off and the market's been undershooting them, and it's playing out again. If you look at the dot plot here, they're expecting to be more aggressive with the rates than the market is. And I tend to agree with the market than the Fed, just because there's a history there. And I think it behooves the Fed to be more optimistic. If they signal to the market that they expect the economy not to be as good in the future, it could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think that's primarily their motivation.
Go ahead.
I understand that. Indeed, there was definitely a school of thought back a bunch of years ago, I think, you know, half decade ago, and it was exactly that. It was the signaling and the whole the way they went with quantitative easing was, in fact, you know, if we cut rates, that's going to signal something. So you know, that's a colorable argument. I understand that.
How much do you think we have to worry about the idea that, I mean, this has potentially been a concern in the past, where the Fed has been a more aggressive on, say, in this case, raising rates to the point that it could undermine the strength of the economy and slow down the economy? Is that something that's a concern, or how likely is that as a possibility, and how far off would that be before that becomes a problem, do you think?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the mysteries out there right now is what we call the shape of the yield curve, and yes, that's how 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, 30 year bond price, what the yields are on those instruments, and the a little bit surprising thing is that long term interest rates are surprisingly low for what they would be historically at this point. And the way, you know, back to your, you know, as that relates to your question, you know, it almost is as though the market is thinking that the Fed is going to make a mistake and raise rates too aggressively, because the long-term interest rates are not as high as they would be normally, given what's baked in. Now, I personally don't think, it's a little bit of an unorthodox view, but I don't think that they're going to, that raising interest rates is going to have such an effect on the economy that it's going to slow it down to that point.
It won't be the Fed's fault when we go into recession.
I don't think so. You know, they've been raising rates, and it really hasn't taken the wind out of the sails. Yeah. So I question.
At some point, could that change, though? I mean, isn't it, you know, at the early stages, we've been at this such a low interest rate that, you know, if I'm paying nothing, you know, versus 1%, maybe that's not sufficiently motivating to slow things down. But if, you know, get to a certain point, it might start to have some impact where I think twice about buying that home or, you know, the car that I need to finance, or as a business, maybe, you know, making that investment that might be looking to do with the use of, you know, resources.
At a certain point, certainly. I tend to think that maybe the impact, the efficacy, the impact of monetary policy is not quite as great as we make it out to be on the economy. And if it is, it probably comes through the currency channel, by which I mean, you know, raising interest rates raises the dollar and so on. And we have sort of export issues on that front.
One of the things that we were talking about before we went on the air was the whole notion that, you know, just interest rate risks. And I noticed you had mentioned that there might be some risks that investors are overlooking. Is written in some notes here. Do you think that that's, I think a lot of times when we talk about this between ourselves, Brian and myself, I'm still kind of focusing on the notion of, oh, rising interest rates. I'm a little worried about what's that do when I have a certain duration? And he's like, I'm not worried about that. Bonds do fine over time. And we've got a certain approach. You had talked about a barbell approach the last time you were here, I think. Brian's been talking about that barbell approach as the way to deal with some of these things. You know, how much should our listeners be thinking, I should be averse to the use of bonds generally, not necessarily one type or another, but just generally because of interest rate risk?
Well, I think everybody is probably taking stock of their bond portfolios right now. And, you know, it may be, I think, and they should, because, you know, rising interest rates mean lower bond prices. And it may be one thing for your listener or people who own bonds to see their bonds drop in price from 105 back down to 100, because, you know, to erase some gains. Yeah. But it might be a different thing if interest rates keep rising and they start trading at discounts. It might focus everyone's attention. So I think that's something that, you know, people are, you know, might want to pay attention to, that, you know, there really is risk out there with regard to bond pricing, I think.
So in your space, the high yield bond space, where the bonds you invest in have more credit risk, they tend not to be as directly affected by interest rate movements. They're more correlated to how stocks move, perhaps. Do I, as an investor, do I get sufficient risk management by being invested in a high yield bond fund that might not have interest rate risk, but aren't I still taking some risk in the process? And how do you want to talk a little bit about that notion?
Yeah. So, and then what you're touching on, I believe, is that in the high yield bond market, there's a bit of a natural hedge, by which I mean, if interest rates are rising, that probably means the overall economy is doing okay. Right. And so that would mean that the credit risk in the high yield bond market, which is higher credit risk and higher return or higher interest rates, it would mean that the credit risk has gone down. So it offsets a little bit of what might go on from the pure interest rate phenomenon.
You want to talk about spreads?
Yeah. So I cringe a little bit when people say interest rate risk and they ignore spread risk. And yeah. Just for the listeners out there, spread risk, we're talking about the additional money you get paid over a treasury security by taking credit risk. So it's a measure of credit risk, like Chris was talking about. But it's also a portion of interest rate risk. So, you know, what I worry about is, like Chris said, on investment grade bonds and treasuries, I'm less concerned about a few basis points tick up in the intermediate to long-term rates than I am about a huge blowout in spreads like we've seen in 2008, like we saw in 2016. We've been in an incredible Goldilocks period in the high-yield bond market for a couple of years. And obviously this has a much bigger and dramatic impact on the price of bonds than, say, your short-term changes in investment-grade securities. So could you just comment on, do you expect this Goldilocks period to continue? What are some things that we could worry about? What are some things that we can do within the high-yield space to hedge against these type of concerns?
Yeah, our base case, our central estimate, is that rates would continue rising, that the economy is okay. And then in that case, there wouldn't really be a huge need for spreads to blow out. And as you're pointing out, they're not at their widest levels by any, you know, they're much closer to the tights, right? And they are at the tightest levels, I mean the lowest spread levels. And the way we're handling that, by the way, is we're confining our purchases to the shortest end of the maturity spectrum, and we think that is going to help and immunize the portfolio against even spreads moving up, both interest rates and spreads. So
how does elaborate on just how that has is helpful in that concern?
Yeah, so you know, let's say we buy a bond that has an effective redemption date of, you know, June of next year or a year from now, let's say.
Okay, not
and,
far off.
And maybe we're getting 2 percentage points over what the risk-free security, which would be treasuries. You know, if in the course of, all right, so I'm saying buying something about a year ahead, you know, if 6 months from now there's a case where again spreads, the yield premium where it widens out, that would be a very small price impact for all intents and purposes.
Because it won't last very long, and then right. You'll be able to reinvest the money anyway at a different scenario.
Exactly.
Okay.
But I think, you know, one of the, you know, we do have an, you know, we're looking, you know, over our shoulder for the other side of the equation, which again, our central estimate is that things are probably okay. But there's a lot of, you know, there are, you know, on the other side of the equation, there are risks out there. I suspect that, you know, is front and center for you. You know, there are things like trade problems. There are, you know, there's Brexit. There are budget issues going on in Italy right now, and those could cause spreads to widen out. Again, we're really happy with how our portfolio is set up because we think we're not susceptible to that. But there is that scenario out there that you're pointing to, and that's one reason we're set up the way we are.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's interesting. Another thing that I was just thinking about as you were talking, and I hope I don't catch you off guard here, but there's a lot of bonds that are dropping to BBB that used to be higher investment grade bonds because it's been so cheap to leverage up. It's been a common move to do over since 2010, let's say. I imagine that some of these BBBs are going to start following the BBBs, which is high yield land for those listening. Is this something that you think is a good advantage? Are you concerned for investment grade industrials in the BBB space? I imagine for yourself, it's probably an opportunity where you can buy some fallen angels that aren't necessarily bad credits, but have big blowouts and spreads and a buying opportunity. Can you comment on that dynamic? Should I be concerned about BBB industrials, and is it good for your business?
I don't think we're gonna. You know, if I go back to 2008-09, we had the potential downgrade of the big financial institutions from investment grade into high yield, and you know, even the mere threat of that was extremely disruptive. These huge issuers. Fingers crossed, we won't have that phenomenon. But there are, you know, there are high, you know, thinking of Teva, for example, that's, I think, a $15 billion issuer with very low spreads to trade, you know, trading 2% off of treasuries. And if that gets downgraded, you'll have presumably some forced sellers. And, you know, that could be an opportunity. I don't think it would swamp the market. You know, I don't think a $10 billion issuer being dropped into a $1 trillion market would in and of itself swamp the market. But it's certainly something that, you know, you pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a quick break. We need to take a break for a commercial, and we'll come back and talk more with Bruce Monrad of Northeast Investors Trust. Stay with us.
Do you have a professional doing your payroll? If not, you should consider Capital Payroll Systems because they are the professionals. Capital Payroll Systems is the dependable service that provides accurate information and timely service. Capital Payroll is the worry-free service that provides total tax filing and new hire reporting. And Capital Payroll Systems is the personalized service that continually offers unmatched customer assistance and time-saving solutions.
Hi, this is Chris Boyd of Asset Management Resources. We're thrilled with the professionals of Capital Payroll Systems because they make my life easy. I don't have to worry about deadlines or filings and fines. I just talk to Pam or Linda and Terry, and they do all the work. Simplify your life. Talk to Capital Payroll Systems. They are the professionals.
So if you're not using the professionals, call them toll free at 800-298-0008. That's 800-298-0008. Or visit them at capitalpayroll.com. You'll be very glad you did.
I'm lost without him. He took care of everything. all the investment issues. I have no idea how to manage now.
When the time comes when you need that extra help, turn to Asset Management Resources.
Hi, Chris Boyd here with something more for your financial well-being. What brings life meaning for some is significance. For me, working with widowed clients after the devastation of the loss of a life's partner is when it's clear we make a difference. Oftentimes when couples hire AMR, the reason isn't for improved performance or better risk management or even the convenience that working with a professional fiduciary can provide. Rather, it's because they want to be sure a spouse is well cared for with a professional they can trust without fear of product sales or costly commissions.
Asset Management Resources, LLC, is a registered investment advisor in Hyannis and Denham, AMRfinancial.com, for those intent on a secure retirement.
Hey, welcome back to Something More with Chris Boyd on WXTK 95.1 FM. I'm here with Bruce Monrad. He's the portfolio manager, really. Is that correct? Your
right.
title?
Yeah.
Northeast Investors Trust. He's chairman and trustee, and he's in studio with us. We also have Brian Regan with me from Asset Management Resources. We talked about a variety of things. One of the things that I think is interesting to consider is, do you take a sort of a top-down economic outlook on a impact on the way you design your portfolio? I know we've been spending a lot of time on thinking about, you know, where we're at today in the economy, where we might see things a year or so out, and, you know, just trying to forecast a little bit and how that might influence how we think about the structure of our clients' portfolios and how we might want to be positioned now versus sometime as we go forward. Do you do that sort of thing as well, or do you kind of structure it more, hey, we got a great opportunity with this purchase, we got another opportunity with that purchase, and, you know, incrementally, one by one, build up your portfolio?
I think it's probably more the former. I think we do start with a macro view, but certainly we then, I would say we overlay it. You know, the nice thing about bond investing is that you have a posted yield, meaning, you know, you can see the yield on a security, and that often, if you have a contrarian bent to you, that tells you where to look. So it's maybe
so
a little bit of both, but there's definitely
both, yeah.
a macro view to it.
Would you share a little bit about, you know, sort of what's your view of how things are, where you see things going, how that might influence the way you think about the design of your portfolio? I think you kind of alluded a little bit to that with some of the short-term opportunities, the way you've talked about it when it comes to spread and so forth. But would you elaborate on your sort of your economic view and how that factors into how you think about the portfolio design?
Well, we're relatively constructive. And again, I guess ultimately we're trying to figure out where interest rates in the economy and on the economy, you know, that one, I think we right now there's very little in the way of hiccups.
Yeah.
And so the credit risk right now is relatively low and benign. You know, we have to worry about some of these events coming possibly in from left field, meaning, again, trade war
is an example.
You know,
yeah.
That sort of thing. And you
do
know,
you think there's a lot of those kind of concerns? I mean, trade war is prominent right now, although that seems to be dissipating a little bit with having recent events with Mexico and Canada kind of look to be mitigated as a risk. China certainly isn't necessarily yet resolved. Hopefully it will be, but how big a concern is that for you, just that the trade war will not get resolved as a part of the art of the deal or something?
Yeah. You know, maybe we look at it as there are a couple of very hard to measure, you mean probabilities, very hard to measure outcomes out there that give us a little bit of pause. And, you know, and I mentioned them, and maybe they're each of them is a 1 in 20 chance.
Okay.
You know, obviously with varying degrees of impact, and that's just, it sits in the back of our mind. But, you know, again, each of them is 1 in 20, but if you add them up, you know, there's some risk there.
Okay. So, is that as far as the eye can see that you think, you know, the economic outlook generally looks pretty favorable? There's no reason to think otherwise at this time?
I think so. In and of, you know, left to its own devices, I would say, economic recoveries don't don't necessarily die of old age.
Right.
You know, we have to pay attention, I think, to the length of the recovery. It's been a long time since we've had a recession. But if there aren't fundamental imbalances, and I'm not really sure there are, other than asset pricing, and again, maybe in the interest rate markets, you know, it's probably, you know, I think we want to find some, a cause for what would cause the next recession. I think we want to see that. In the absence of that, I would think we would probably be doing all right.
So that would bode well for investors to be owning high yield bonds in that scenario, on the basis that the outlook looks good for these, you know, that kind of risk.
We would think, again, our central estimate is that that the credit risk is not, you know, in that case would not be that great, and you know, and so that's good. You know, that's a good thing.
How do you look for opportunity? What's the way a manager at the specific security level, how do you go about finding opportunity? You go, oh, that's a good one. We should get some more of that. Yeah. You know what I mean? What drives those kind of decisions?
Oh, well, we're fundamental. At the end of the day, we are somewhat contrarian value investors in the high yield space, value investors. So the way we look for names is we look at areas that have been maybe beaten up. Or it could be just have a different assumptions. And again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the nice thing is with a bond, you look at it and you say, oh, it's yielding 8%. Do we agree or disagree? Does that seem attractive to us or not? And high yield is a little bit of a, it's not like there are 5,000 stocks. If there are 5,000 stocks out there, public companies, they're only, you know, there are fewer than 1,000 high yield issuers, so it's a different orbit to focus on, I would say.
Mm. Interesting. Did you want to chime in with anything?
Well, my only comment on there is I imagine you spent a lot of time looking at their balance sheets and what you expect to happen in their future cash flows, and specifically on their balance sheets, you want to look at things like working capital, their equity balance, who's ahead of you in the capital structure, how much is ahead of you in the capital structure. Things like that, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and we do detailed. There are a lot of companies where it makes sense to do very detailed projection models, and we spend a lot of time on that.
Yeah, sometimes you want to look at the marketability of the underlying assets as well, just in case they need to sell the assets in order to pay the high yield debtor, because they're going to get paid before the equity portion is. So,
right.
When you say you're contrarian somewhat, and you know you. Does that mean you're buying things when they're particularly poorly rated, as an example, that you might say, this is unfairly poorly rated? Or do you even look at what rating services attribute to a rating on a bond in lieu of doing your own assessment, you know? But and maybe what is the, if you know, what is the average credit rating of, you know, your bond portfolio?
Well, right now we think of ourselves as a single B fund. Mm-hmm. I think because of the considerable extent to which we've shortened the average maturity of the portfolio, I think the things we've been buying are fairly low risk compared to normal. Mm-hmm. But you know, there are, as I say, there are times we will dip down when you get paid for taking risk. You know, we would hope that we would do that properly.
So that will change based on circumstances.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. You had mentioned earlier when we were talking, I forget whether it was on air or off air, we talked a little bit about the anniversary of Lehman. I think you wanted to kind of chat a little bit about that. That's been, you know, 10 years and all that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now we're, 10 years almost to the money. Where are we now? We're early October. I think
it was like just maybe 2 weeks ago or a week or two ago.
I think that it was that it was 10 years ago now that the Congress voted down the TARP.
The first time.
And that was extraordinary volatility back then. You know, really, really... tough times. And we were in by being in the credit markets, we were in the engine room of, we're in the engine room of finance. And, that was certainly a very, difficult time for the world, for the world. We were, every step we were, you know, we were closer to, you know, really, really disruptive things, you know. I mean, it sounds melodramatic, but, you know, for want of a letter of credit, which sounds like a total plumbing issue, you know, tankers would not have come into Boston or Providence Harbor and dropped off oil at refineries, you know, to turn it into heating oil.
Right.
So it was a very difficult period.
Yeah, it's scary to think about in some respects. I've been going through looking at some of the old things I'd read, you know, talking about that time, just to be more familiar with it as we kind of deal with that anniversary. This, in the midst of this period of time, was very scary for our investors. And I think any lessons that you think we should be deriving or can be deriving from that era as investors?
Well, you know, I think a lesson would be that the financial system, which we essentially had a 1930s breakdown of the financial system superimposed onto the 2000 modern architecture, and maybe we thought that couldn't happen because we had the banking system sort of figured out based on, you know, from the Great Depression, but it turned out to be more fragile. And you know, the thing that, you know, that I think those, you know, those the Paulsons, the Geithners of the world, meaning that, you know, the former
Treasury head of the Treasury and head of the Fed at the time.
They're trying to impress upon us that, you know, sort of in the backlash after the crisis, they have taken away the tools. The Fed, for example, does not have the tools that they had to fight the crisis the way they did last time, and they haven't.
How do
put
you mean?
Them back. Oh, I think, you know, example, I think, was it the Fed or maybe it was they implemented, I'm not going to say the Fed backstop, but it was the money market industry, you know, within about a week after Lehman, and that sort of guarantee doesn't exist anymore. The lender of last resort function is, I believe, somewhat constrained. Certainly TARP, which is TARP was where the infamous quote-unquote bailouts, but they are now all but prohibited, and that was one of the key tools to straightening it out. So you know, Geithner, again, he was at the time he was New York Fed chair, but he became Secretary of the Treasury, and in his book on the crisis he said, I thought we would, you know, I knew the tools were being taken away from us and we thought we'd put them back in, but they haven't put those tools back in. And so we have to pay attention.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they would still have the tools to save AIG, save Bear Stearns. That code goes back to the 1930s post-depression.
I think they can arrange arrange
and help finance a sale if it's a systematic risk, I believe.
Okay, I'm not sure whether the exact facilities would be there to provide the financing and the guarantees.
I think those guys have been on a roadshow to impress upon the country that we need a fiscal response in the next recession because monetary tools have been tapped out. So I think their fear is we have a downturn and we can't lower interest rates 500 basis points because we're only at 2%, 2.25%, 3%. So there's impressing on the people that we need.
You want to talk about that for a minute? That whole fiscal response idea? I mean, you think about the reality that we've been in a prolonged bull run. It's been a good time. And, you know, in terms of fiscal policy, we just reduce tax rates, which should be good for the economic expansion, but it doesn't help our fiscal house when it comes to, you know, dealing with our debt. As it were, you know, we're financing more of the stimulus ultimately by having increased budget deficits and continue on. That could be problematic over time. I think that's part of the backdrop of that, don't you think?
Well, I think people are unsure, and Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think we're all unsure of where the line is with a central currency, with a strong central bank. How far we can drive our budget deficit.
Like how where does that tipping point,
where can we push the line?
It's problematic.
So
yeah.
I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. I think there's a wide variety of theories, you know, in when you have a recession.
Because it's a moving target, right? It's something that's, it may be, exacerbate, you know, it might be one thing today, but in the midst of anxieties and problems, it could become people lose confidence around the world. And if they lose confidence in the world, in the dollar, or in the, with the willingness of the treasury to make good on its promises, or the ability to make good on its promises.
Well, I think that's the ultimate thing, right? You'd be concerned about foreign investors not willing to fund the U.S. government, which I don't think is a concern at all now. I think they're more than willing to fund the U.S. government. But I think if we're not willing to have a fiscal stimulus in the future, during a recession, it would actually have a negative effect on our federal budget rather than a positive effect. So it actually behooves us to spend money in the deficit. But I think
at that time,
that's what I'm trying to say with these patriots from the Great Recession going out on this roadshow and trying to, I think, educate people on the need for that type of response during the next downturn. If the monetary tools aren't there, it's going to be hard.
I didn't mean to catch up. What do you think of the role of Chairman Bernanke and Treasury Secretary
Geithner,
Paulson at the time? Brian's referring to them as patriots in this context. Other people feel like they
heroes erect statues to them.
That mm-hmm. Other people feel that they went beyond their mandate or whatever their powers would have allowed, and that maybe they shouldn't have bailed out so many institutions and so forth. Do you have thoughts about this? I mean,
I think you absolutely had to. It was
just crisis beyond belief.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think you have to point out that the government got essentially all its money back from the quote unquote bailout. Where they didn't get their money back was in bailing out GM.
Right.
So.
But not the financial institutions.
They got their money back. So with I think it was a great tool and really worked out really well.
A good investment, as it were.
Yeah, and it was a profitable investment.
And Tim Geithner with the stress test was probably the greatest tool in that whole time.
I agree. I agree with you there.
There wasn't enough TARP money. You needed not private equity, but you needed non-government equity to fund these banks. And the only way to do it was through the stress tests. And then only giving the limited TARP money that you could to the struggling banks that you could. So I think that was a hero move in there. Yeah. I think that was one of the things people protested the most was the TARP bailout. I'm doing quotation marks for you guys.
Air quotes.
To a certain extent, it was a bailout where those people didn't necessarily deserve to keep their jobs and their companies, but they did. But I think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, not all, right? Lehman went under. That's what we were
I think this is open to debate, but I would say, you know, that would have been, if it could have saved Lehman, if it could have done a mini TARP for them, it would have spared us all a whole lot of.
Well, I think they tried, right?
It wouldn't have gotten worse, you're saying.
There was supposed to be a shotgun sale of that company in the 11th hour, and it didn't
go
through.
With Barclays or whatever, yeah.
I forget who it was with.
It was Barclays.
Yeah. Barclays.
Yeah, and it just, it ran out of time, and arguably they did on Wednesday, I think it was, they gave money to AIG that they had not done
just three days before.
But yeah. Yes, they wanted, I think, a private solution on Saturday. They wanted of Lehman, they wanted a solution akin to that they had for long-term capital. And then which was that hedge fund that blew up about a decade prior,
right?
And then I think on Sunday they were trying to get it sold to Barclays, and then there were questions of UK votes,
the foreign regulator.
I think they also, yeah. I think Barclays wanted a guarantee on it, and it didn't happen, and that sent a lot of things in motion.
Let's turn our attention back to you and your fund as we sort of wind down our conversation, a few minutes. But how do you position things right now that it's a good time to be in high yield as part of the fixed income? Do you view that as the dominant part of the fixed income portfolio of most investors, or a slice of the pie, as it were?
Probably a slice. High yield leverage finance is about a trillion out of 15-20 trillion of securities there. I think it's 8 trillion of. So it would be a slice, but I think it fits a. There's a role for it.
And so perhaps our listeners, if it's something you would like to take an interest in, a local company. You guys are located in Boston,
Right in Boston. Yeah.
So and just as an aside, thank you for being a partner with the Financial Planning Association, the Massachusetts chapter.
Oh, we enjoy it. Yeah.
It's always great.
Great group. Great
association. Thank you very much. It's good that you're participating in that, and kudos for you for that. And then as far as if listeners are interested, remember that mutual funds are sold by prospectus. So you want to get a prospectus and be probably prudent to talk to your financial advisor before making any investment decision. So if people want to look into it again, Bruce, would you give that ticker again?
Yeah, NTH, N as in Nancy, NTHEX. And our website's northeastinvestors.com, and we're very reachable, and we're here in Boston, and we're always available to chat about the credit markets or beyond.
Well, time flies when you're here. it's hard to believe, but thanks for making the trip to come in and be with us today, and we'll hope to have you back sometime soon.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks both.
Have changes in the law sabotaged your estate plan? In recent years, there have been an unusual number of changes in estate law. The Uniform Trust Code, the Uniform Probate Code, the Principal and Income Act, changes in state and federal tax laws, asset protection concepts, IRA stretchouts, all of which affect the assets you leave your loved ones. Remember, your estate plan is like a parachute. It must work properly the first time. The attorneys at the Law Office of Boyd & Boyd recommend that you have your plan reviewed at least every 3 years. Call 508-775-7800. To attend one of Boyd & Boyd's free educational seminars or to set an appointment for a review at their office on Route 28 at the Hyannis-Centerville line, call 508-775-7800. Or visit their website, boydandboydpc.com. Your family will be grateful. You create the legacy. We create the plan.
Hey, she did all the banking stuff. I thought it'd be easy for me to learn how to do it myself.
When the time comes when you need that extra help, turn to Asset Management Resources.
Hi, this is Chris Boyd with something more for your financial well-being. I invite you to come by and simply talk to me and find out how AMR makes the complex simple.
Asset Management Resources, LLC is a registered investment advisor in Hyannis and Dedham. AMRfinancial.com for those intent on a secure retirement.
I thought love was only true and fair tale.
All right, it's time for the Slade Mortgage Minute. We've got Mike Burton on the line. How are you, Mike?
Fantastic. I'm ready for another minute with Chris Boyd on a Saturday. Thanks for having me.
That's right, the Slade Mortgage Minute. So how you been, Mike?
Well, I've been great, pal. Hey, happy fall, everybody. It's football season, and it's Red Sox playoff season, so yeah.
Life
I'm happy
is good.
With all of them.
Yeah, excellent. So
things are good, and it's a busy market now as a – Well, you saw what happened with the bond markets this past week, Chris. So
it's been funny how it's
pretty happy about
it. It seemed like it had been going up, and now it feels like things have turned around.
Yeah, well, we've got a little bump in rates. People said, "Oh, they're a little higher than I thought." I mean, we're in the high fours now for 30-year, and approaching five, really. So I will tell you though, we've been getting busier for refinances because a lot of clients are finding, hey, if rates are going up, I really got to take advantage of it now.
Jump on it before it's too late. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So refinances, people paying off credit cards, home equity loans, taking money out, paying student loans or paying for the tuitions has been really popular. So refinances are great. That's been busy. But I wanted to mention about not only really – first time, but home buying, home buyers themselves, how creative people can be right now with home buying. And we at Slade Mortgage have taken it to the next step where we're doing a workshop, for lack of a better word, on October 25th in Falmouth here.
Oh, that's a good idea for like people looking to buy their first home or something, or for who would be appropriate for that?
Well, it's really for anybody thinking about where can I position myself to be in a good place in this kind of a real estate market? How can I be prepared in, you know, what has essentially been a seller's market? How can I really prepare myself and feel confident that when I go into the market, I'm going to be able to make the best deal for myself and be able to get the house I want to get?
Are you doing this yourself as the speaker, or are you having a panel of some kind?
Well, we're making it very dynamic and straightforward. There's going to be three of us. There's going to be a Slade mortgage representative. There's going to be a local realtor and a local real estate attorney.
Great.
We're going to do it for an hour. It's going to be October 25th in Falmouth at Museums on the Green from 5:30 to 6:30. That's the first one. Then we got another one planned for November. And we're going to, you know, go over some of the basics and go over some really tips that are really, we found, have really made a difference in people negotiating in the last year from all three of us in the profession. So we're going to...
Oh, that'd be real helpful. Offer, that's good.
What's that?
That's really helpful. That'll be good.
Yeah, Mike, that sounds great.
Well, we had a number of people say, I'd never even heard of these things before.
I remember when
and
I
these
started,
two other
I was
professionals,
blind.
that we're working with, Kara Foley at Ingalls & Volcker and Kevin Clower at Ahmed & Clower in Falmouth, really came up with some very unique tips along with some of the programs we have. And we're gonna present this in a workshop on the 25th of October in Falmouth and offer to anyone who's thinking about buying their first home, second home, an investment property. We're going to offer these tips, and then we're going to have an open forum just to be able to discuss their specific
Q&A
situations.
That sort of thing, yeah.
And that's where we found the most value, to make this a very dynamic conversation, not just us talking to people, but getting feedback from everyone.
That sounds really good. How will people register, and how many people can you accommodate?
Well, we can handle up to 50, and it's going to be at the Museums on the Green, Falmouth. They can register online. We have an events page that they can go to and register there.
On your website, Mike?
On the website, sorry, yes. It's slademortgage.com, www.slademortgage.com. And they can also call at 508-548-0177, and we just want to know how many people are showing
up.
Yeah,
so you know what to expect.
And we'll have, you know, light refreshments there. We're going to make it fun and easy. If you want to participate in the free credit report and credit report analysis, where we look at your credit, find out if there's any things we need to take care of, we're going to do that for everybody that shows up also as an incentive to come by.
So you got some great insights and like tips that you're giving, but it's also probably a good way to get the lay of the landscape, I imagine. I remember when we were buying our first home, we didn't know anything. I mean, and as it is, it's an area that's outside my day-to-day stuff. I think that would be really good. I think that's a great opportunity. Good idea. Glad you did that.
Well, The idea is Lisa and Chris, you know, as you just said, Chris, is when you haven't done this before, you haven't done it in a while, and you're hearing the stories about how much it's a seller's market and how there's bidding wars going on, and how, you know, my highest and best offer, and I don't want to overpay now for it. We've really realized between, you know, a real estate professional, an attorney, and ourselves as the mortgage conduit of really how to prepare yourself correctly to take advantage of when you see a house that you like, really how to be able to make your best offer and make the best transaction to have the seller accept your offer and have this close in a very expeditious and realistic time frame. And, so it's a lot of little things that we found out are really going to add up to making a difference. So we're hoping anyone out there listening will join us then. And if it if it gets filled up, we do have another one already planned in November.
Terrific.
And we plan on doing one a month all around the Cape. The first one will be in Falmouth, and then we're going to move into going down Cape from there.
Great. Well, for those interested, go check out slademortgage.com. Might give out the number again if they want to register.
Yeah, give us a call at 508-548-0177. And we'd love to have you come by.
Be of help if you need any help with your mortgage needs of one kind or another, right, Mike?
That's where we are. Reverse mortgage, first-time home buyer programs, jumbo programs, VA, FHA, and USDA. We do all the time.
Wow, there's a lot. Yeah, geez. All right, Mike, thanks for being with us today. We got to run for the news, and we'll catch up with you sometime soon.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Chris. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Mike.